True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Listen, it is late, late, late. It's 11 o'clock. Sorry, I have been traveling all day. This is the time for our big time tennis regional championships. And so just got off the tennis court. And anyway, so I apologize for this late hour. I knew it was going to be at least this late, although I was hoping to get on earlier, but just had a little bit of homework to do when it comes to this show. So anyway, it's going to be just me tonight. I do not have a guest. I've had so many guests lately, and they're all very different and have different things to add. I've been talking with Dr. Gary Picotta because I know many of you would love to see him on the show. And we're having some fun discussions. Look, Gary and I go way back since the Idaho case. You know, we were on Dateline together, Minute Crime Con. Ooh, I'm tongue-tied. And so anyway, I would love to have him back on the show, and I'm pretty hopeful that he'll be on soon. As far as what we have ahead of us tonight, I am not going to keep you all long. Look, I know everybody's tired, and I appreciate you guys. When normally we're a morning show, and now we're, you know, here late at night. So I appreciate you all. In fact, we're going to go back to the morning tomorrow, probably 9 Central is what I'm looking for to do. So plan on 9 Central tomorrow. Things always change if I end up getting one of our great guests. And there's another, well, there's actually 4 I'm working on now. And so when they call and they say, we're good to go, then I always try to accommodate their schedules. So anyway, I do want to touch on Nancy. You'll see this cool background behind me, by the way. I'm staying with a friend, and she has, and this is pretty cool. You walk into her home, and to the right is the dining room. It's kind of a very traditional home. And to the left is a sunken living room, only it's not a living room. She is such a stud athlete, not only one of the best tennis players on our team, but also an amazing golfer. And this is literally what she does. She could sit in here and hit the golf balls, and it simulates everything. So she has all these golf courses that she can play on, even though she's really in her living room. So it's pretty cool. I'm a big golfer too, but I'm terrible. She actually coaches me on many occasions, particularly with getting out of the sand, which is the biggest problem of mine. I've discovered the best way to get out of the sand is to never get in the sand. So that's what I try to work on now. It's kind of like in tennis, I suppose. I try to just hit it where people aren't. So anyway, again, thank you all for being here. We're going to talk about Nancy Guthrie, first of all. Look, the case is stalling out. I understand. There's not much out, which we should expect. I want to call everybody's attention to the Gabby Petito case. I wasn't on Twitter, X at the time, or anything when Gabby was going on. But obviously, I was at Brian Laundrie's house. I was working for News Nation and with Brian Enten at that time. We were inseparable on that case. And the bottom line is, when it comes to these cases, that when the FBI is involved and when they are in large part in charge, they're never going to say anything. If you look at that case, Gabby Petito, you never heard from the FBI. You heard from the local authorities, but you never heard from the FBI. And that's what we're seeing here. And Nanos is under so much fire. He has these questions due to or answers due to all of these questions. And, you know, it's a mess what's going right on right now when it comes to Nanos. And he continues to be under fire. And I just wanted to comment on that really quick, because it's hard to express how much effect that has on an ongoing criminal investigation when the person that's supposed to be leading it has lost confidence from the people below them. They're supposed to be leading this case and making decisions. And believe me, things are going on behind the scenes, everyone. This is not a case that is cold. I know people say, well, it has to be cold because we're not hearing about it, but it's the furthest thing from cold. And when you hear about a cold case, that's a case with no leads. These people had 30,000 leads to follow up on. I guarantee they're not through even probably 10,000, one third of those leads right now. Only the task force is actually working this case. So it's not like before where literally they said 100 agents were assigned to the case. That's not the case anymore. It's a task force. So the amount of manpower has been reduced. I believe you have the analysts in the background that are still looking through all those videos, but it's a reduced case in terms of manpower. They want to solve this, everyone. And I truly believe in the background. In other words, in the squad area, on the streets and everything, you can bet they know so much more information. I just want to quickly, just in 2 minutes, recap my position on the case, because I know a lot of people asked last night. In fact, it was funny. I looked down in chat. I try to look down every once in a while just to see what y'all are talking about. I love this chat. It's always so active and the mods are amazing. I just appreciate them so much because they are in large part what makes a channel fun. You want to be able to come up and have your thoughts and your what you think about the case. And sometimes it's even removed from the case, but you guys get into these discussions. I love it when I look down and see that, because that's what this forum should provide. It shouldn't just be, even though my husband teases me, gosh, you sit and stare at a computer and talk to it for an hour, sometimes 2 hours. And how do you do that? And I said, well, I guess when you're really passionate about a subject or passionate about crime, and you believe in this kind of advocacy, it's easy. And it truly is easy. But anyway, I love to see you all. I love it when I see like right now I can't read one word, but I can just see, the boxes moving up. So anyway, I'm glad you're all here. But I did want to say, like I said, I stared over at the chat last night and they said, does Jennifer ever give an opinion? And typically when I host guests, I really want them to have a big stage. I think it's so important to let them talk, to not interrupt, and to try to, when I see that they might not know something or so on, I try to steer it back to their wheelhouse, so to speak. But anyway, when I have a guest, I see myself more as somebody who is interviewing rather than being interviewed. And I try to keep my comments at a minimum, although sometimes I just can't help myself. But I wanted to make it clear about my stance on Nancy Guthrie, and it's really concise. Number one, absolutely planned, absolutely targeted, absolutely against Nancy Guthrie. It wasn't a mistake. It wasn't a house in the neighborhood that they thought they'd just go to that night. 100%. Number two, I truly believe, as we've seen from the dates of the 11th, the 24th, the 31st, and then, of course, the 1st is when she was abducted, mentioned as possible what I call site surveys. Before you ever do a mission, you have to go and you have to see what's going on in that neighborhood at the time you're planning the mission for, cars that might be coming and going, lights that might be on or off, people living at the house, who's coming, who's going. Are they all in bed at 10? Are they not? That sort of thing. So you do surveillance in advance of any mission. And, this tells a lot about this case. Just the fact that I think we can at least pin down the 11th. I don't know about the 24th and the 31st. But if you remember, who mentioned that was actually, and I can't believe I'm still up on the screen. Let me add, we will get back to that. See what happens when I don't have my glasses on. I want to get Nancy up on the screen. She's what's important here. But I essentially 100% believe that not only was she targeted, but there was a lot of precursory surveillance done prior. And I think Porch Guy Will knew about the camera. He ducks his head. He goes right to it. I think that they knew she would be home. So I think it was extremely targeted, and I think it was very well planned. I believe there was more than one person involved. I believe that very strongly. I don't think Porch Guy did this on his own, although I really respect my counterparts and other people who have that belief. It's just not my belief, but I respect that. Why don't I believe that it was alone? The number one thing I look at is, and I actually, we're not going to do it tonight, but down the road, some very interesting notations on the Porch Guy footage that I want to show. But essentially, he had a HT in his pocket, and I know I've gone back and forth about this. I respect all opinions, but I know an HT when I see one. So I know an HT when I see one. I believe, again, that more than one person acted. I believe she likely died that night. I don't think she made it into the second day. I think she likely died either from possibly shock. I've talked about this, your heart rate speeding, your blood pressure dropping, your respiration speeding up, and basically where your hypoperfusing, where the oxygenated blood just isn't getting where it needs to go because you're so out of whack in terror. She was a strong woman, though, and I think it's possible she could have, fought to the degree an 84-year-old could fight. But nevertheless, I strongly believe that she was in that house a very short amount of time. I know the camera went out at 1:47, was yanked. We know that now, ripped off the wall. I truly believe that the they were actually an ivy, kind of like a lantana from what I can tell for those plant people. I love lantana. But I saw red in them, so I'm not sure it's really lantana, but something like an ivy type lantana. I really think he gets that because he's double gloved and that glove is slipping in some way. And I base that on the fact that the vegetation is actually lodged between the holder. I mean, that's the force he used. So it wasn't just up there waving around like many of us, including me, thought, is he waving it? Is he trying to cover it? Which I never thought he tried to cover it because I always said he would just use his hand. I didn't know whether it was a message he was trying to send because I've showed the video of Annie and Savannah, how they used to play right over there, right on those stoops. And so I thought, was this some sort of message about the ivy? But the bottom line is, I really think it was used to help him grip and rip that camera off. And again, I base that in large part from the greenery that we see literally lodged in the apparatus that held the camera. And if he were out there just waving it, there would be no reason the force used to get that stuck in right where the camera was held. I think it's because he went and gripped it. As far as, again, what happened after, either she died on her own, the stress of everything, or they killed her. Or through the stress of everything, she was killed, I should say. I really believe she was gagged. I know a lot of people think that is respirated blood. And I totally, have the utmost respect for my colleagues who believe that. I just don't believe that. I think she was in there long enough for them to gag her, put something over her head, and pick her up and get her out of that house. The reason I think that is just from my experience. You do not want to be driving around with somebody capable of screaming because somebody could hear, even though it's in the dead of night, And what happens if you do get pulled over? And I believe part of the site survey they did was just to see what other police presence was in that neighborhood, in and around there. And they probably discerned what we all know. And that is that, you know, there's not many officers or police, particularly on that back road, that could be taken where you're never going to see a street light. You're not going to see road camera lights. There's just nothing out there. And so, but nevertheless, you can't not have somebody you just abducted screaming, which I believe at 84, maybe she wasn't able to walk far, but she certainly had her lungs and her voice box. And you have to make sure that in case she does live, that she doesn't see your vehicle and where they're going to take her to. And there's a secondary location, I believe, that at least was intended to be brought to. And I really believe they probably bound her and put her in the trunk with a hood over her head and a gag. That's what I think. And again, all I can do is go from my experience. I've never heard of somebody getting kidnapped in the cases that I've worked, other than the parental kidnapping cases. They didn't gag their children. Typically, not saying it never happened, but in the cases I had, they didn't have to do that. But in other kidnapping cases, which my experience is in cartels and gangs, and again, that was because of money and drug debts owed. So they were very rough with the people they took. But nevertheless, they were gagged and blindfolded and constrained. That's just what I believe happened. I think she died that evening. I just don't think she could take it as an 84-year-old woman, everything that was happening. I think that went south. So basically an abduction gone completely south, where now you're not going to get any money, even though I truly believe the initial thought was likely money because of Savannah being worth so much. But I want to take this to another level when we learned that Savannah said those notes are quote unquote real, meaning they are related to the abductor. That took things to another level, because at the point at which I believe Nancy was already deceased, that you are literally on day two reaching out to media, to two local stations, which I also find very interesting. And then 12 hours later, so on the third, TMZ gets the notes for the first time. They go national. We've talked about this. Why did they pick TMZ? Because TMZ has literally the largest reach when it comes to the specific niche of celebrity and true crime type media. Between their podcasting and their YouTubing and their television presence, all of that is huge. It's like 1.4 to 8 every day million. And again, you're looking, in other words, if I'm going to watch, if I'm going to want to know about golf and I want to send a ransom note to golfers, I'm going to go to the Golf Channel, ESPN. I'm going to pick that sports venue. And that's what they did. When we found out confirmation that those first two letters were real, everyone, I have to tell you, that was pretty jarring, because to me, that said they are 100% willing to continue to try to hurt this family. It was evil, mean. To me, it was to humiliate. And I say that because you're not trying to get money when you go to the media. That's the last thing you want to do if you really want to get money. You don't want law enforcement involved. By then, law enforcement was already involved. You would have left a note there for Annie and Tommaso, who were the first two there to find, without law enforcement, right? They just went to check on her. And then you would look at that and say, wow, they want $6 million for mom. And as far as we know, there was no note like that. If there was a note like that, then I'm even stronger in my belief that their initial message or their initial actions were for money. But we haven't heard anything about that. That's how you get a ransom paid. You don't go to the media. They went to the media strictly to hurt this family and to humiliate them, knowing the Bureau would say, not that you have to follow what the Bureau says, but they're looking for them, to them, the FBI, for guidance. And essentially, the Bureau is never going to tell a family that if you don't have proof of life, you can't pay. You can't pay without proof of life. And that's why you saw Cameron, who came on all by himself the second time that the family, if you will, addressed the media and addressed, I shouldn't say the media, tried to address the kidnapper and say, listen, just give us a way to contact you. Give us a way to contact you and show us proof our mother is alive. That was his only message. It was very straightforward. It was unemotional. And it was, listen, these are the two things we need. Of course, crickets after that. You know, there was no negotiation purportedly regarding this. It's like you missed this deadline. This was going to happen. And then by, I believe, the 9th, this is going to happen. And it did happen, you know, or I think it happened way before the 9th. But nevertheless, just the fact that they wanted to go forward and make this so in the media, I think it was to humiliate them. Because what are we seeing now? We are seeing now everybody questioning the family again. Oh, the family didn't pay. The family didn't pay, even though she said they were real. Well, yeah, they're real, but no proof that Nancy was alive. Then later the family came on with Savannah on the after the 9th passed. She comes back and, you know, she said, listen, we just want our mom. We need to be able to celebrate her. They say celebrate, but she, you know, she acknowledges that she is dead, basically. And so at that point, it was kind of over. And then on the 10th were the beginning of this next section of ransom notes, which are really not ransom notes. They're sort of demands. They're extortion. If you give me, well, it didn't start out at half a Bitcoin. It was even more than that. If you give me this amount of money, then I will tell you who the bad guys are, and I will let you know where your deceased mother is. And it's crazy because I think everybody realizes it's probably a hoax, like, you know, a fraud going on here. But this is just me. That fraud needs to stop. Savannah goes back to work and two more letters come. It's just, I mean, again, that's just my opinion. My opinion that something should be done on that vein. I want to look before we switch cases really quick. Hey, Jen, hope you're doing well. And it is sad. And thank you, Alan. Oh, it's Alan. Alan and I go back to the Gabby Petito days. And you know, Alan, I just have to say this about Alan, for those of you who might know him on X or something. Alan and I don't agree on everything, but talk about a guy who we have so much in common in terms of the missing and advocacy and trying to do the right thing. So the fact that we can't agree on everything is okay. And that's what, if anything, I could make this platform about, is that everyone in the true crime community, even if you don't agree, it's okay. Let's discuss, cuss and discuss these cases. And, you know, let's be able to have an intelligent conversation, present both sides. I know I have had different people who have contacted me, you know, either publicly on Twitter or on X or DM'd me, and they've really brought me around to a point they had to make. I'm like, you know what? That could be right. And that's what this is all about here. So Alan, thank you. It's great to see your comment up here. we are going to move now. And I talked longer than I meant to on Nancy, but wanted to make it clear where I stood there. We're going to talk about Lynette Hooker. For those of you who don't know about this case, she and her husband, Brian Hooker. How come everybody's Brian? Like it's Brian Laundry, Brian Walsh, Brian Enton, Brian Hooker. It's just such a popular name. And I know I'm missing one other Brian from one of these cases that we're on, but nevertheless. Brian Koberger. That's right. It's five off the top of my head. Anyway, Brian Hooker. So these are the Hookers. And literally, they have a TikTok show called The Hookers. I think it's Sailing with the Hookers, something like that. And they were married for 25 years. She was married previously. It's, she has a daughter, and this is, so the daughter is going to come back into this equation. So I want to mention her, and this is the stepdad. But again, married 25 years. And they live on a boat. Lynette Hooker has been in the boating scene since she was little, young. They're mariners. They literally live on a boat. And that's really important. I think many of you know, I spent many years, 4 years in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And gosh, by the way, some of the best years of my life. We had to move though, because the kids were 9 and 10 and they needed to do things like play football and cheerlead and all the things they did. But nevertheless, we had a boat. We were on dinghies all the time. And that's what she went missing on, is on a dinghy. And basically, these rubber inflatable boats, they call them ribs, actually. But dinghies usually are a little bit smaller than a rib. But this is what they look like. They're dinghies. And she was out, they were out in the Bahamas in Elbow Cay. This is Elbow Cay. You can kind of see why it's called Elbow Cay. Looks like an elbow right there. Beautiful, by the way. I always say the Virgin Islands has the best water. If you're looking for a place with the best water, it puts Mexico to shame. The U.S. Virgin Islands and the British Virgin Islands. There's just, it looks like, how I describe it is, it looks like somebody put blue and green food coloring, like a huge tub of it or a tube, and just sprayed it into the water and made it look like this. And the Bahamas is a very close second. I think the Bahamas is stunning, how gorgeous it is. But these Ks are not particularly, you know, violent in terms of water. They are definitely shark infested for those. And I put this on Twitter, but I'm just going to share a very quick story here because I know it's late. For those divers, when you go to the Bahamas, you're allowed to do some really cool things. Now, I don't know if they're still doing this because I did this when I was, you know, much younger than I am now, but used to be an avid diver. And so went to the Bahamas to do a couple of shark dives. And the first part of the dive, the morning, literally you're with these guys and all they're doing is just throwing chum out, you know, tuna heads and all these fish carcasses and heads. And then, so obviously before you know it, all that blood is out there. You've got an entire, are they called schools? I'm going to say schools of sharks. Schools might not be the proper term. If somebody knows in chat, let me know what a conglomeration of sharks are. I think it might be a school, but I don't know. All these sharks are behind us. They're everywhere. And so that's the first dive. Once they have all the sharks gathered, then you dive in. Yes, I know this was stupid, but that's what we did. And it was fine. You know, that you have all these rules. Don't splash around. Just be sleek. They do not like to eat humans. But if you are mistaken for a fish, you could be in trouble. But again, they have all that chum in there that they're eating. Nevertheless, that was us. We swam around with them. And that was interesting because they're around, but you know, they're really not touching you. So then the second half of the dive, which was, you know, so we did that from just say you go out at 9 to noon and then noon to one, you had lunch. And there were only four of us. This is a teeny dive because most people are too smart than to want to jump into the water with a bunch of sharks. But we wanted to do it. And the second half of the dive, we went into super, super shallow water. And we got on our knees and our dive instructor suited up in this mesh suit. And he sat down there with us and he had kind of a poker that he had fish heads and, you know, again, all this chum and bait. And he would poke it out and then they would come and snatch it off. You know, because, you know, sonar, I know they're amazing animals with sonar, but my understanding is they cannot see. So they rely on mostly on their sonar and then, you know, to figure out, I guess, what they're going to eat. So we were all four down there. And what was so funny is they said, okay, we're going to know right away whose heart is racing because the sharks, because of sonar, are going to pick up that, you know, the, I guess, reverberation of the heart. So anyway, there were four of us, three guys and me, and I was on the far left. And I'll never forget, I'm sitting there and all the sharks around me, one came up and his nose actually hit my mask. My mask flies off, but I had my regulator and everything. And I'm like, oh my God. This is terrible. So I figure out of everybody out there, the other three, I must have been the most scared or at least had the highest heart rate because those sharks were, my husband was there as well. And he goes, I can't believe this. You know, the three of us are here and then all the sharks are just swarming around you. So I'm sure my heart rate was so high. Nevertheless, I just had to tell that story because it's relevant here. So not only do you have this woman, well, let me get to this part. This is the other important part. So they're out on this dinghy, Brian and Lynette Hooker, avid mariners, boaters, know their stuff. This is what they do all day long. They live on a boat. And what he does is he goes out here to Elbow Cay, this beautiful area. It's at 7 at night that apparently they take off. And he says, well, he ends up paddling back to shore. That's a whole nother thing I'm going to talk about. And yet Lynette is not with him. Why? Because he says she just fell off the dinghy. She just fell off this thing, this dinghy. Dinghy, Elbow Cay. Bahamian waters. So this isn't, you know, they're not out to sea. They're not in, you know, the ocean. They are in this cay. He says she fell out. Furthermore, he says that she had, so you have this lanyard, and this is typical when you're in a rubber inflatable boat, or so this is the thing. All dinghies are ribs, but not all, no. All ribs are dinghies, but not all dinghies are ribs. In other words, ribs are typically thought of as being a little bit bigger and dinghies are thought of as being a smaller version. Honestly, I'm going to tell you, we use the term interchangeably, rib and dinghy. But dinghy is thought of as being smaller. So anyway, they're out on this dinghy and she just fell in. According to Brian, she just falls in. Look at this. I mean, this is just so obvious. So he says she had the lanyard with the key. So this is, it's kind of like, for those of you who have ever been out on a Sea-Doo, right? A jet ski, something like that. You have this lanyard with the key. So if you fall off, the jet ski, it's so funny. They, as you probably know, they circle around and they basically come back and get you where you fell. So you fly off and you're there and it motors around back at you. In this case, the motor cuts. So it cuts off. Now, I've had a lot of discussion with some different people as to what motor was on their dinghy. I can just tell you from my experience, you can imagine how often this happens, that whatever, you lose the key, you drop the key. You know what? There are so many ways to start a dinghy motor. You know, the motor that is actually hooked onto the dinghy. Most of them have a pull rope like a lawnmower, if you can think of it that way. So you don't even need the key. You just yank on it like a lawnmower and it starts. This is for obvious reasons. You could be way out, because believe it or not, people boat on these things a little bit. I mean, we ran all around on dinghies between St. Thomas and St. John, not to St. Croix. St. Croix is way too far, but between St. Thomas and St. John and all around those waterways on dinghies. And, you know, if somebody dropped the key, wasn't passing it to another person, whatever it might be, you can imagine, now that's at the bottom of the ocean. You have to be able to start your dinghy. Pull rope. You can also actually open up the door, if you will, to the inner workings of the motor, and you can take and hot wire the two fuses, so to speak. The wires, not fuses, the wires. And you can work it that way. There's actually more ways than that. I've never had to do anything beyond the ripcord. I've seen the fuse thing done. I didn't do it. I've seen somebody do something with a screwdriver. They were actually able to start it. There's a lot of ways. So I am not buying, first of all, that was the first thing that stuck out to me. I am not buying what he is selling when he says he had to paddle back to shore. I'm just not buying it. If I'm proven wrong that this was some strange situation, that this particular motor on the dinghy was not able to start manually, it'll be difficult for me to believe, but you know, it's a possibility. I'll keep an open mind, but I don't believe it. I think it was very much part of his plan, because he needed time. He needed time for her to die. She was apparently a very, very good swimmer, and that could take some time. Again, these are shark infested water. Do they want people? No, but when all that splashing around that occurs when somebody is fighting for their life, you know, not a good thing. So anyway, his story is so full of holes. It's such garbage, in my opinion, and I'm not buying it. I always say the best places to kill your spouse or somebody you want to get rid of that you're close to, you take them on a hike, and you can either push them over, you can just, when they're turned away, bludgeon them with a rock. There's so many ways to kill your spouse when you're hiking, because now it's just you and them. They're dead in the middle of nowhere, and you can do whatever you want with the body. You can push it off a cliff. You can give it, and then you go back and you tell your story. Oh my gosh, she fell from a cliff. Or, oh my gosh, I have no idea what happened. That's what's happening with one of these scientists, Rocha or something like that is her last name. And they believe that the significant other likely is involved in that too. But nevertheless, it's the perfect place, or these are the perfect place when you're out here in the middle of the water and nobody's paying attention to you, and you push your partner off. I want you to listen really quick to what he tells his stepdaughter. This is right after this happens. This is his call to the stepdaughter. Just want you to take a listen to this. Oh, please don't tell me I don't have it. Here it is.
Hello, honey. I just got a call from Booktown Search and Rescue, and I found a flotation device that I threw to Mom when she fell overboard. And they haven't found her yet, but they can now focus all of their efforts in a smaller area, and they're still out there searching today. So I just wanted to update you and let you know. I love you. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
I mean, come on. I'm not buying it. In other words, this is what, let me give you the backstory on that phone call. So basically he's saying, yeah, she fell over, but we had life rafts, you know, or life preservers, you know, they're orange, typically for boats and things when you're going to be in the ocean. It's not like a little one. It's not a worm. It's these big, they're orange. They've full back and then kind of sectioned on the front. And he says he threw her one. He says he threw her one. And so that's where he's saying, listen, you know, they found where I threw it. And so, you know, now they have a better area to look at. This is so dumb. I thought the riptide took her. You know, I thought the tides were so bad and the water was flowing so bad that you couldn't save her. By the way, he's former Marine, as I recall. Look this up. Former Marine, I believe. Another avid swimmer. And you're not going to jump in there and save your wife. You don't have to worry about your boat going anywhere because it's not going anywhere because it has the kill switch shut off. Get this too. Normally he always wore the lanyard. Not her, him. He liked to be in charge. And so now all of a sudden she has it. That's his story. But yet the people that boated with them said, nah, he liked to have a lanyard. So that doesn't line up with me. The fact that she went off and somebody, I think it was Alan actually, that said he knew what this was. And I think that's what everybody is saying about this. See that teeny little motor in the back? And that it might not have a ripcord. And like I said, well, might not have a ripcord, but there's a lot of other ways to start it. How would you not jump in after your wife? You threw her this isn't a big boat. You grab your life preserver, you throw it to her, and what, does she miss it? I mean, and now she's got a life preserver, and these things could keep up a 300-pound guy. They're amazing. You're telling me this woman couldn't paddle if you're sitting there? You're paddling to her. Listen, authorities don't believe this either. Her daughter certainly doesn't believe this story. Holes you could drive a Mack truck through. It's not making sense. They have him detained, but they're going to have to press charges. If anybody knows in chat, I have not heard that they have pressed charges yet, nor have I heard that he's been released. So neither of them historically, when they went, and we were bad about it too. We never wore life preservers. None of us did. The only one that wore life preserver was my biological dad, my papa. He always did. He's the only person I knew, and he still lives on an island to this day. He lives on an island. Y'all know I'm Puerto Rican. He literally lives on an island and is terrified of the water. But we would get him to go out with us, and he had his life preserver. So all of us are running around. None of us wear them. And not on a dinghy. We had a big boat. But I just thought that was so funny. But nevertheless, these are small boats. You can see them. They're, you know, the preserver would have been there. Just say she fell off. Come on. There is no way that she just all of a sudden got swept out to sea. No Wait, I'm going to show you elbow K again. These are K's, basically little, you know, water around the big ocean. And they're usually the calmest. They're wonderful. K's are so great. You know, they've got a lot of land around them to, I just don't believe it. I don't believe it. She was an experienced boater, everyone. Now, I will say this. They were looking, and this is the last I've seen. Remember, I've been traveling all day and had that tennis tournament tonight. But she, the last I heard, and anybody in chat can correct me if I'm wrong, but in 2015, there was a domestic violence report, but it wasn't her that was the victim, according to the report. It was him. He had a bloody nose, and she had no signs of trauma, so they arrested her. But according to relatives, these guys fought all the time. She had left before, you know, they were separated, then they got back together. So, you know, there seems to be a very volatile, they both drank heavily, volatile situation. But again, I'm still not buying it. I don't care about how volatile your domestic violence issues are. That's important if they could show a pattern of these sorts of things happening. But as the stepdaughter to him, the daughter of Lynette, she surmised that likely they got in a fight on this rib, on this dinghy, and he did something he probably later might have even regretted. But I got to tell you, from that phone call, he doesn't sound, I don't hear any regret in his phone. In fact, I hear a cover up, right? Well, you know, this is what I did. So now they know where to look. See, I really threw in this dinghy or this life preserver. I said today on X, it reminds me so much of Alec Murdoch. You know, how he, in other words, one of the biggest things we look for when you go to somebody who has just lost somebody, you know, the American Idol kid who he's not a kid anymore, but young person who he's been arrested for murdering his wife, his two kids in the adjacent bedroom, right? His first thing is, well, you know, I think I left the door open and then he came through there and, you know, this is probably, no, people who lose somebody, oh, same with Ellen Greenberg's fiance. Again, he hasn't been charged with anything, yada, yada. But, I mean, you should hear his 911 call. Well, I don't know what happened to her. She's just laying here. And then they say, well, can you do CPR? He goes, well, I can't. There's a knife sticking out of her. Well, why wouldn't you have mentioned that early on, like in the beginning of the call? Nevertheless, it just reminds me so much of the same thing is when people have done something really bad and have committed a murder, they love to talk about sort of how things got where they were. You know, they talk about the good things that they did related to it, and what they leave out is their emotion. There's no emotion. They're not sad. They're not upset. They're not thinking my 25, you know, I don't know about you all, but for you all that have been, and I'm on my 30th anniversary. I'm just going to be honest here. This year is my 30th. I always say the hardest thing to do, the hardest thing I've ever done, is to maintain a happy and, you know, fruitful, good marriage. It's the hardest thing, I think. That's just my opinion. And I tell you, I would be so sad. I don't know. I don't know how somebody loses their wife of 25 years and is like, yeah, you know, I threw that life jacket, they found it, so they're going to kind of focus in. Well, if these currents were so bad that they swept her out to sea, a great swimmer and mariner, why didn't they send the life raft or the life preserver out too? Yeah, it floats, but it would still go. Anyway, I wanted to talk about this case because we really advocate here for, you know, domestic violence victims. It's so sad. Look at that smile. Just so unnecessary. All right, everyone. I've kept you way too long. I ended up being almost an hour. I wanted to be 30 minutes tonight. Thank you all for being here. I know it's past our bedtimes. I am going to head to bed. Another match tomorrow. Everyone, until next time, may justice be served for Nancy Guthrie, the Guthrie family, and for all the missing. Thank you again for being here.